Becoming a parent is probably one of the most daunting experiences I've ever had in my life. And I think it's true for most of us because there's just so much to bringing a child into this world, regardless of whether or not you planned to have a child or not. Most times you feel as though the ground under you starts shifting your life in ways that you never really expected. Your relationships take a profound change, and every aspect of who you are essentially comes into question. Then there are the realities of being us, Black people, and our tortured history of broken fatherhood, and as my friend Vangile Gancho once put it, a generation of nervous mothers. It is a history that adds layer upon layer of socioeconomic and psychological complexity. In the midst of all that, there is you and your spiritual journey. A journey that you are barely able to make sense of most times. The thing, though, about becoming a parent is that it reminds you quite violently that the world doesn't revolve around you and your challenges. Very often you have to take whatever it is that you believe you're struggling with and put it aside to attend to a little tantrum over a broken toy or rejection of a friend or a first heartbreak. As you come to grips with your spiritual journey, you also come to the realization that your children are also on their own journey. Yet, for some reason, the idea of spirituality and children is something that is very rarely spoken about, if at all. So, I want to understand this aspect of us, the dynamics of spirituality and how it relates to us as parents and how it relates to our children. Is there a way of setting a good spiritual foundation for ourselves as parents and for our children as human beings with their own mission and purpose in this world? To get some insight on this, I spoke to one of the most amazing and dynamic human beings I've ever met. She goes by the name of Celuxolo Nhlengethwa Stewart, but most of us know her as Gogo Simenjalo. She is a spiritualist, a counseling psychologist, and CEO of AfroSavvy Media, which has one of the most prolific YouTube channels on African spirituality. When it comes to the issue of children, spirituality seems to only come in when there is a question of a miscarriage or a terminated pregnancy. It is only within that time where we acknowledge the spirit of a child, especially when you're talking about small children, right? And it sort of got me thinking as to, why is that? Why is it that way that we only talk about spirituality and children only in that context? Like, what is it that we are not aware of when it comes to parenting, especially within, to start off with, in that period, the period of conception or before conception and during pregnancies and stuff? Are there things that we are not aware of that pertain to spirituality as men and women who are bringing children into the world and the child themselves?
Okay, it's I like that you start off okay, because that's actually the beginning. The conception is the beginning of life, and it's also a spirituality and spirituality is the one thing that defies science, you know? So, and there's no one that can ever really truly say this is when the spirit enters the embryo, you know? Because we don't know. We don't know this. But we know that those two should happen together. I know for a fact that when... Without scientific backing, I know that the beginning of life is at conception. And we speak about when there's that fertilization, that's the beginning of life. And there can be no life without spirit. That is the one thing that actually pushes life in any living organism. The only thing that actually makes it living is the spirit within. And it's the one thing that science cannot... claim to know anything about, you know. So with that, it follows that conception happens with the spirit. That is when the life begins. That is when, yeah, that's the beginning of life.
And in historically, has there been mechanisms of modalities or ways in which people approached child procreation, rather? Because I'm there's a common perception, and I don't want to say it's a perception, but there's a common belief that we chose to come into this world, that, you know, there is all of that, that we chose our parents. Is there an African spiritual perspective on that?
It is, because the African spiritual concept of it would be the fact that when when a child is born in Africa, we believe that it's an ancestor returning.
Mm-hmm.
So that actually now explains that for us.
Mm.
We believe that with each child, it's someone that's been in the family previously that is coming back with the mission that they need to fulfill.
Mm.
That is why we believe that for a child to... We believe that you actually go and check. We check. We're supposed to check who actually is coming back.
Mm.
We're supposed to check for a name so that the name is in line with this child's purpose, or it's the name of the ancestor that is returning.
Yeah.
We check for a name. So it speaks to that. It speaks to how we view conception. Mm-hmm. It's how we view childbirth.
Mm-hmm.
When it makes sense, right?
Yeah, no. It makes a lot of sense. When my daughter was born, because she's two now, her birth confirmed something that I thought what I was imagining with my son, right? In that I knew my son years before he was born, right? I had a name for him and everything. And when I would tell people, they would be like, oh, all men want sons, you know, as first. But I was like, no, I'm not telling you what I wish. It's not something I want. It's not a desire. I'm just, this is a sense. At the church, they like to say it's a knowing.
Mm. Right? It's you knowing this person who's still in the spirit, who has not come,
you know what I mean?
Into the physical space.
But at the time, I'm like, and when he arrived and whatever, there was a familiarity to him, right? But I was young at the time. I was in my early 20s. And that concept of spirituality was very far away. I wasn't even going to, I was not inclined in any way into, you know, spiritual rhetoric, as it were. But with my daughter, I observed it years before, you know. I observed her emergence into my understanding, if I can put it that way, right? And then my spiritual journey was continuing, I would come across healers who'd be like, who's this little girl? I'm like, you know, and at that time I hadn't even met her mother, you know. They'd be like, who's this little girl? And I would see, not even see her, just feel her. You just feel, you know, in dreams where I would wake up and I feel I've just spent time with someone, right? And so what I'm getting at is there a way in which we are actually connected to our kids that we are not consciously aware of?
Okay, because also our children are a part of us,
mm-hmm.
a part of who we are, an extension, if you will,
mm-hmm.
of us, and also of our partners,
mm-hmm.
also an extension of our mothers and our fathers.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense. It would make sense that that we actually do have a knowing.
Mm-hmm.
We do have, and we also, it makes sense also that we bring forth from spirit what we need to bring forth.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like our spiritual contribution is not even determined by us.
Mm-hmm.
So bringing forth a child is also a part of that.
Mm.
It's not something that we actually determine. I'm going to look at how people will use, how you will fall pregnant using contraceptives after you have taken care to actually make sure that you do not reproduce.
Mm.
And
yet.
Exactly. So it's tricky, the work of the spirit. When we speak a lot of God without actually understanding who God is, because God and spirit are one, you know, and that is where all life comes from. So it's not something that is up to you and I to bring a life into this space, because we could also try and it would not happen. And there would be nothing wrong, physically wrong with you or your partner, but it just will not happen because it's not in that space. It's I'll speak about how we actually, you speak about your daughter, which is actually crazy. You speak about your daughter. Those are things that actually happen a lot in Dumbin, where you will see this people, this whoever, the client's child or their children, and you are able to actually say that, oh, if Afunabatwana, you can actually say, calm down, you actually will be getting your child. Your child will be coming, or you can actually now start find ways to prepare them to not be expectant, because it's actually not even in the spiritual space. Because the things that we always say that we manifest into the physical, things that are in the spirit, it's the same with the children that we bring into the world. They're in the spirit first before we can actually bring them here to be with us. I don't know what your question was. I forgot. I've just died.
No, I understand that, because I think in asking the question of whether, you know, we are connected to our kids, to our children in the spirit, and when they come, it sort of makes it, it almost romanticizes parenting in a way that the realities of parenting are not like, you know. Because when I speak on this topic, it seems like then parenting will be a dream, you know, that because you saw the children and this. And I think I'm speaking directly to people who are finding parenting very challenging, in that then they would feel like, maybe I did the wrong thing. You know, maybe parenting is not for me, because it can't be for me if it is this challenging. Or even, you know, in very many cases of people where the people that they share children with, they are strange relationships. Mm. They are men who abandon their kids, you know. Mm. Are those things in any way influenced by the process in which the child came to be? This is one question. And then the second question is that it's attached to the first one. Is there a way in which people can and should prepare for bringing children into the world? You know, are there ways in which we can help the process be as sort of spiritually light as possible?
You know, the first thing about child preparation is the one thing that has actually gone to the dogs now, which is family and the basis and the time in which the child is actually brought into, the space that the child is brought into. We now have children out of wedlock, which was something that was never, it was unheard of, really. And there's a reason for that. There's a reason, because it's about the bringing up of the child. The child should not be brought up by one person, by a single mother or a father.
Because it takes a village.
Yes, because we need the balance between the feminine and the masculine and to bring up the child. There's also, I know I say that, but in these homosexuality and same-sex relationships, and we believe that the best thing to do, the best space in which to bring up a child is with love, and it is true. But also, we should note that even in those circumstances, there's always one that is majorly feminine, you know, in energy, and one that will be majorly masculine. So the balance is there, even within just the one person. Some people gravitate or they change between the two. Some people have a proper balance of masculine and feminine meninity. So there is that. It's okay, this is the children are brought in and there should be that balance in bringing them up. But there also needs to be a cross-checking in terms of, because one person that cannot always be right. We need to be able to, one, balance each other off, and two, there'll be times where I'm not, I have strong points and weak points. So there's that inter role play. And then there's the looking at the home, itself. When we are brought up, we have not, it's not just society. That is how, when we were brought up, we were taught, it is a teaching, or we found that we came into a life that was mothers and fathers, you know, and there was supposed to be harmony in those kind of spaces, and there hardly ever was. The fathers, whenever they, even though they were married, there was a marriage. There's capitalism. It took fathers away as well from their homes. So the preparation also was disturbed by that, because then the fathers would go away to work and come back, make the wife pregnant, leave. So now the mothers were saddled with the work of, besides just being pregnant, besides just pregnancy, they go through pregnancy on their own. They go through childbirth on their own with the support of other women, actually, in the community. And they go through, it's pregnancy, childbirth, and the bringing up of the child. So it became something that was difficult to, you prepare for it, but you prepare for it outside of the confines of a natural home, like, as we were taught. So, but in terms of preparing for conception, the body needs to, in the African context, we have herbs also that are used to prepare the body to carry a child, you know, to bring in an all-round healthy child. We have that kind of preparation. There are specific
and these would be for the woman,
mainly for the woman, for the woman, because she's the one that carries the child. We have herbs that we take when it's now closer, the time is coming for childbirth, to make that process also easier. And we also, there's that belief of the difficulty that what happens during the childbirth, the difficulty into actually coming into the space, which is now leaving the comfort of the woman, coming into this space that we call, into the space, you know. So that also is supposed to have some kind of effect on the kind of person that the child is going to be. So there's a spiritual, there's a spiritual element to that. We want to, we aim, a lot of the time we aim to make that process as easy as possible for both mother and child. But depending also on this mission that this child has come here for, that also will have a kind of impact in the way that they actually come in. Without, I'm talking about mainly natural birth, because now we, that whole process has been compromised. We don't give children a chance to come into the world naturally now. It's also always easier to just cheat labor. It's easier for the doctors in terms of time, in terms of planning, because if it's a C-section, I know that you have this appointment for 7 a.m. We get the child out at 9, I can get another child. Natural birth is tricky because it cannot be planned for. You cannot,
it's natural.
It's natural, yeah. You have to wait it out. You have to give the child the time to actually make their way out of the woman into the space. So that has stolen from the child being prepared for their life mission. just the abruptness of being removed from the womb and being brought in here. Mm. Because there's a level of work, there's a level of, what do I call it, of download, of learning, of a lesson, of that prepares you in that time, that prepares you for what you're actually coming here mm-hmm. to do. I believe that a lot of our children also just struggle with the reality of life based on the abruptness of the removal mm-hmm. of the being removed from the womb mm-hmm. of how they actually come out. The things that they would have actually a resilience that they would have learned mm-hmm. in just the process of finding their way out of the womb and entering mm. the space.
So now it's 2020, right? We are very detached from the homesteads. A lot of us are living in the suburbs or living in townhouses. You know, we don't have abogogo, we don't have aunts around. How do young couples sort of make sure that, because now the child has been born, to create in that first few weeks, months of the child's life, where traditionally their child would be, you know, locked away with the mothers and the grandmothers. In this day and age, you have a woman who gives birth and she might not necessarily have the capacity or the resources or the infrastructure of maternal support. So it's just her and her partner. How do they ensure in those urban areas that they create a fertile environment for the child to develop on a spiritual? Are there like do's and don'ts that a person should observe just after childbirth that consider that like the times that we're living in?
Togos. No, because our spirituality is ancestral based, mm-hmm. you know, we want to tap into what our ancestors did and the reasons that they did the things that they did in the way that they did them, mm-hmm. you know, and because if we know what they did and we know the reasons that things were done in the way that they were done, then we are able to assimilate. Mm. We're able to make use of what we have, what resources we have to actually make it as to assimilate, to make that, to bring that space into where we are. I'll speak of, for instance, it also, because it's ancestor-based, it speaks to our culture and tradition mm-hmm. a lot of the time mm-hmm. as well. So if we know, if I'm Swati, mm-hmm. for instance, and I know that this is what is done when a baby is born, Mfana basically would take the child to Gogo, mm-hmm. and Gogo, ideally the child would have been born at home, mm-hmm. so Gogo would have been there. Mm-hmm. But when things changed, you're in town, so you take your child to a Gogo. Gogo, Mag, when the child is received, Mfaga, they put, in my culture, they will Faga Umlota on the, what do you call the space of the head?
I don't know it in English.
Yeah.
I actually don't know it in
English. Yeah, the anyway. So, yeah. With
Gunalis the cranium, isn't
yes,
it the cranium?
The cranium.
Yes.
So in the cranium, they will faga ash and basically just report the child to the ancestors, and also just to mark the child mm-hmm. that this the child is home, mm-hmm. and the ancestors are supposed to be able to locate the child with just that. Mm-hmm. It's just a whole introduction, because it was Umlota, because Umlota boba setigo, which mm-hmm. would be Endlini kaGogo. Mm-hmm. That is how it was. Mm-hmm. So that is where ordinarily all the meals are prepared. That is where also is the space where kuba nemsamo khona Endlini kaGogo. That is where all the prayers are made. Mm-hmm. So that is the space for the maternal mm-hmm. ancestors that's the space for it. So that is an introduction, basically. It served as an introduction of the to the ancestors of the child.
Mm.
So that is what would be done. So we can actually kind of, now we understand the reasoning behind it. So we can, in the urban space, you can actually, and you can't go home or whatever, but now we encourage that, the people are encouraged that they have their own msamos, because a lot of people, the family structure has been so destroyed that people cannot get home, people do not have homes, people don't have, they don't have homes because they don't know their fathers, because families have, the family structure has been destroyed. And so that does not then mean that we cannot practice our spirituality because we've been removed from the home. So because of that, we reconstruct the lives that our ancestors lived, and we have our own samos. So in your, the space of your samo, that's where you will burn your mpepo, that is where you burn your incense. So there will be ash that happened that will come off your samo. So that is what I would say you use for your child's cranium, for your baby's cranium, that, because that is where you pasha. So you take that, use that mpepo ash, you put it on your child's forehead, that's now, and you pasha or you pray. That's the introduction, you know. I'm just coming back to that. There's things that we can actually do.
And what about things like restricted movements of the child and of people, in that, you know, like if there's a newborn in a home, you didn't just walk in and walk to the bedroom, you know.
True.
You have to sit somewhere first and, you know, cool off the feet, as they say, before you go see the child. Is it something that you would encourage people to do?
I definitely that would.
They should have some kind of visitation protocol.
I certainly would, because there was a reason for it. That's why I started with understanding your tradition, and understanding entails just knowing, and knowing why those things were being done. Because if you have the if you know the why, then you'll be able to appreciate the importance of it. A child is very susceptible because they've just come in, they are fresh and new, and we are so, and anything, they can take anything, because even in the most of the friends and family members that we actually have, we do not know where they go. We do not know what they do all the time. We do not know, and it could be innocent things, it's not even anything to do with Ubutagati. Innocent things like, who were they in bed with last night? What was transferred from that person that is not in your life, but is in their life? And now they are coming to hold your very susceptible baby, you know? So it's a whole, it's a protection measure. Just keep that space clean. Like you say, Meskuluma manje nge corona, that before this, even without a baby, when you'd get home, the shoes would be left outside, and you'd enter into the home and you'd just leave the gems and whatever's outside. That was, and that was to protect the space, and even for grown-ups, but that was just what it was. So you can imagine how much more a child actually needs that, you know. So I would say, another interesting thing is, Pandawa Wuti, you keep the child away. Or you don't take the child out. We keep our children in. We were supposed to keep
3 months.
In Sesotho culture, that was 3 months.
Yeah.
You keep the child at home.
But it's not practical.
It's not practical anymore. But you keep your child at home and you restrict visitation. That's one. But also in that keeping the child at home, you are. It was also about the things that we do for to protect our children are not just within the space in which the spaces in which we live. It is the covering. We need to have that covering
of the home itself,
of the home or the child.
Okay.
And the child.
Okay.
Kona, in other cultures where the child is, they burn things. mm-hmm. to protect that space.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense that we can do that in our homes as well. Burn Mpepo. Mm-hmm. Mpepo is a ear cleaner. Burn Mabaso before Umfana Adolfiga, which will dispel all evil spirits or all dark energies that are in the space. Mm-hmm. And then the child is brought home, because now really the children are born in hospital. So if as preparation for the child coming, especially because everything is so planned now, the mom knows when they are going to go have the baby. In that time, before you go, make sure that you burn Ibaso, Lakaya, you clean the energies, mm-hmm. and the child is brought into a clean energy space.
Mm-hmm.
There was also another thing that has been of concern to me has been what we do with the umbilical cord. Mm-hmm. No, with just the umbilical cord.
Yes.
When it falls off.
Mm-hmm.
Because also traditionally, that would be buried ekaya.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be ekaya, it also used to be the father's home or the paternal home, you know. And now there are no homes. Also, now children have no fathers, or there's no relationship between the mother and the father.
Mm-hmm.
So what now do we do with it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've learned since I opened my practice that some families buy a flush.
Yes.
They just flush it down the toilet. And I was traumatized. Yeah,
they wrap it in tissue and...
They just flush it. I was traumatized. I was like, that is the one thing. That's the grounding. That's the grounding for the baby. That is to mark a home for the child. That's what it was about.
Mm.
That whatever, if the children become street children or anything happens, they will always be able to find their way home based on that umbilical cord,
mm-hmm.
where if you bury it at home, that is where they are going to go. So I was thinking, so if it is flushed, the child will always be lost in this.
Mm-hmm.
You see, now this is also to do with my teaching.
Mm-hmm.
It's also to do with how my spirit works.
Yes.
You know, and I since learned that people flush the umbilical cords because of the nature of the. It's the living circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
I was taught that it started happening in the townships.
Yes.
Because there's no space. One.
Yeah.
Two, the neighbors are like right next door.
Mm.
And because of witchcraft.
Yes.
That
you don't want people to access it.
Do you see how things change? So now I'm lost. So now what would I do if I lived in that kind of situation? So I would also throw it down the toilet. I would still feel bad about doing it because of my spiritual inclination, mm. which is also based on tradition and culture that I've learned as well. So the changes, and we just need to be, I think, to listen,
mm-hmm.
to really listen more, and to, when I say listen, I mean listen to spirit, let mm-hmm. ourselves be guided. That's the only way we can actually do this parenting thing. It is really about a constant connection, constant talking to our people for guidance, because we really cannot do it on our own. And because of the changes that have happened, my word, we are challenged in ways that our parents were not challenged. Yeah.
So now, once a child is born, for most couples, you know, I'm sure the mothers, you know, they go onto the internet, they start reading. Well, they've been on the internet, they've been downloading, they've been reading, you know, the websites, the blogs, sure. What to expect when you're expecting,
yeah.
and that thick book.
If they're lucky, they are reading it with their partners.
If they're lucky, and then you know, those books or those blogs, and that. Thinking, I won't say the Western thinking, but that thinking that there's this thing that the first 7 years of a child are the most crucial, because you know that's when a lot of things are imprinted. What I'm curious about is are there do's and don'ts on a spiritual basis for kids, for parents that parents need to be aware of? Is it necessary to pay attention to the spiritual aspect of a child in those first, let's say, the first 7 years.
Okay. The one thing to remember is that when a child comes into the world, they are fresh. They may be old in spirit, but they are fresh in this space.
Mm-hmm.
And they are going to be... Yeah, they're fresh. It's like, so they are closer to divinity,
mm-hmm.
because there's been none or very little influence,
mm-hmm.
you know. It's like how we speak of the elderly when they are preparing to leave
mm-hmm.
the world. They also become close again to spirit. There's something that they become more spiritual than
like they return to a childlike state.
Yeah, that is what happens. And then we speak of they suffer dementia also as well. There'll be all these other things
which always feels like they're stuck between worlds.
That is actually the same state that a child is when they actually come in. They are stuck. They are in between worlds. They are highly spiritual at that point and susceptible again to everything that can be taught. Everything that influences their lives here. Those are the things that they are now. That's going to make that determines really the kind of people that they are going to be as well. So it's a very critical time spiritually, because also when a child comes in here into this space, they are there's been no pollution, and the world in which we bring them into is created really, or is created by the parents. There's because we bring them into the home. That is what we are creating. Before, especially specifically in the time that we speak of, this is a time where they're not going to school, where they're not, where the influence is majorly from home. And I think it's designed perfectly then that we teach our children our values in that time. And we try to understand who this person is that has actually come into the space without all these other influences. Because once they go get into the system, there's all these things now that they are, there's all this pollution. There's all these things that now influence who the child is without, and this child is not fully grown to be able to, they're not fully grown. They're still very much, their character is still developing. So they're thrown into the system and a whole lot happens in that space. But also when a child is born now with the system, because we cannot avoid the system, getting into the system. We get into the system very early now because a part of the system, the system demands that children are vaccinated. So that already now is messing with the makeup, with the spiritual makeup of the child. Before this, because the body, we speak of vaccines as protection, but the body was created to protect itself. But it was also created, back then it was about nature and what the body was going to be exposed to.
Actually, it brings me to something now that you say that. Is it advisable to use imiti with it on a child? And I mean this, I'm not sure what the context would be, you know, but is it advisable, let's say from childbirth to 7 years, that to use imiti regularly, whether be it for cleansing? You don't need to cleanse children, right?
Not necessarily, unless they've been exposed to uptagati, for instance, to poisonous things, then there would be a cleansing that would be needed or required. But otherwise, no, we should not be cleansing. But umuthi, yes, because umuthi, remember, is natural and organic. At this, especially now, we're in this urban life, we need to actually do that, because not only was it used, or is it used in the natural spaces, it's used to give, it's used to give, to prepare the child for life in the world. It's used to develop immunity to things that they are going to come across, to life again. I can say to life. And imithi that we use also are determined also by geography, I like to say, because nature provides for us in all the spaces that we're in, the things that we're actually going to need to survive. So the mitis that are in our spaces, in the natural spaces specifically, also geographically, are the mutis that we actually need to, for whatever, for the things that we may be susceptible to in the spaces that we find ourselves. So umuthi for a child is essential. It's essential. Kunemithi that are actually used. Well, our children used to be, it was the norm. It was the norm in those spaces. They in back then, it was the norm. Umntwana would be given umuthi wokugcinisa. Umntwana would be given umuthi wokumfikisa. Umntwana would be given umuthi to, actually, for every rite of passage. Umntwana masato puma, now after the 3 months, or now the 4 months, and the child is going to now be taken out of the home, umntwana would be given something to make sure ukuthi akabuthi dinto la ngaphandle. So it was a practice. I would say that we actually still do need it. It is in as much as we vaccinate our children, is it called inoculation or vaccination?
Both.
Konoko. Yeah. So that, as much as we do that, I'm not, this natural one we should be able to keep. And if we had to choose, I would still go for the natural. It's a pity that when we, a lot of us bring up our children, because our parents come from the colonized lot generation, we are products of the colonized parents. So we ourselves are colonized, even though the colonizer had left, or the colonialist had left, but we took that colonialist mindset. Yes, so we bring up our children in that way. I look at my, at how I brought up my children. If I had a choice, if I could redo it now, I would give them muti. I would use that as first choice. And now, because of the system, you have to really vaccinate your child, because to get them into creches, the school, the now creches, you need to produce school, that record. Card, you know, you need to show that I actually complied and I with did this system, with my children, which is also, you see how it was, it's made for us. So it takes the choice away from us. So we're kind of like forced to bring up our children in a specific way.
We've moved from the toddler. Now we are coming into the storm now. Teenagehood. How does adolescence impact on spirituality? And how does spirituality impact on adolescence?
Wow. No, I speak about adolescence and what it actually means, that period of time. That is when you are actually, the child is actually coming into themselves. Now they are seeking identity outside of the parent, where now they are trying to find a purpose to their being. They actually are now also rebelling. You find that they actually now rebelling because they actually want to find themselves. But it's also to do, all of that is informed by the changes that are happening in the body, you know. So it's the physical reality that informs the changes in personality, in identity, and personality and identity and character, maybe even, okay, especially personality and identity. Those two things speak to spirituality. Both of those things speak to spirituality, because identity is highly spiritual. It's you finding who you are, and it is nothing to do, it's not mainly, very little to do with physicality and how you actually look. Even accepting how you look is informed by the identity of self. Self is more than just looks. It's more than just how it's a lot more to how you view yourself, how you view the world, how you think the world views you, and how you interact with your environment, and how you fit in. That is spirituality, or how you do not fit in. That is a time where you are actually, or where a child is now looking, is actually now exploring themselves. And exploring yourself speaks to your spirituality. But so what is it that I came here to do? Who am I? Now you're answering answers to those questions. Who am I without these people who are my parents? You know, it is also the time where, even when we grew up, where a child grows up in a space where, in a religious setting, for instance, or even in an African spiritual context, they kind of like will move away. I'll speak of myself. When I became a teenager, I loved going to church with my mom before this, with my grandmother. That it was the highlight of my life. I loved church because, but when I adolescence hit, I suddenly did not want to go to church. It suddenly did not mean anything to me. I would have rather done something else with that time, because now I was looking at, how does this relate to me? What does this now do for me? You know, what would I rather be doing with my time? That is how spirituality affects adolescence, and how adolescence affects spirituality now. Adolescence is marked by the changes in the body. Okay, that we call puberty. We are now talking about us, or the children. Why do I keep saying us? We're talking about a period where a child becomes is between being a child and being an adult. You know, it's a time where the body is changing to prepare you for adulthood. It's a time where the body is changing to prepare for reproduction. It is, and that, so it's that the hormones change, and it comes back, it brings us to the topic of hormones and spirituality, how the two actually link, you know, because a lot is in, so there's a whole gray area there.
Is it simplistic to say that teenagers are in spiritual turmoil?
They are. I have said to Zani that a puberty is the first awakening,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I see it as the first awakening, because awakening happens. We don't awaken once. It's one of those things that it's like initiation. We say you're not initiated once.
Mm.
So it keeps, whenever there's a change that needs to happen, we awaken to the next reality or our next reality.
Mm.
And that is what adolescence is.
Mm. Mm. True. Is it possible to know that a child is not spiritually well?
Yes. Yes.
Because it's easy for us to send teenagers to therapists, psychologists, and stuff. Is it possible to know when a teenager needs isango?
It is, but I will say that having a traditional healer or seeing a traditional healer should not be something that is left for crisis time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is something that we should actually affect in just our daily, in our lives, not daily lives, but in our lives, the same way that we affect going to see a dentist, the same way that we go, okay, not as often as maybe not as often as we get our hair done, but it's part of self-care. It's part of the things that it's part of the things that we actually need to do,
mm-hmm.
so that we are not always looking at curing, but we are preventing.
Mm.
Mm. So, yes.
So you can tell that a child, like, are there telltale signs that a child is not spiritually well?
Yes, there are. Even those things that you take your child to a psychologist for,
mm-hmm.
Those are still telltale signs that a child is not spiritually well.
Mm.
A physical illness as well will also show that.
And by this, do you mean things like chronic conditions or?
Or things that suddenly come up.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly there's this situation and this child was, how do I put it? Okay, there's a child who grew up and they stopped wetting the bed and suddenly they are wetting the bed again.
Mm.
You know, it may speak to, it speaks to spiritual illness.
Mm.
But the thing is with us, with how we've been brought up, the first thing that we will think of is psychological ill health. Mm. Because there must be some kind of trauma. Mm. Yes, there may be some kind of trauma, but how we look at trauma and how we look at fixing trauma or traumatic experiences or out of our systems is westernized.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Instead of thinking, oh, Mdwana so started wetting their bed again, we'll go to a psychologist instead of checking with a healer.
Mm.
But what could be the problem? Mm. You know?
Okay. There are a lot of people who are in the process of their spiritual calling.
Mm-hmm.
People who have to go epithelium and stuff. And are there ways in which a person can help their child to navigate what that parent could be going through at that period?
Yeah, besides sharing as honestly as you can as the parent that's going to be going through that and spending time with, if you're lucky, you're bringing your children up with your partner in the context of your family, it's things that you can discuss as a family and plan how actually this period is going to be navigated when the mother is not there, or sometimes even the father. it's nothing beats communication.
Mm.
The thing about that time is that we are so unsure of what is going to be happening, even to the parent who's going to be gone for initiation, let alone the children and the family that's going to be left behind. It's also because we don't have that structure, that community structure, and children are mainly brought up by just the mother and the father, or one of the two, or by their grandmothers, which has become pretty norm. It's a very unsure time, this time of having to go epetlweni. It's at some point, believe me, at some point it's going to, the things are going to change. The children who are experiencing this with their parents going epetlweni will not be unsure of this period when it's their 10, or when now they are parents and they're bringing up their children and they have to go epetlweni. It would become normalized at some point. It's just that now it is tricky. In my situation, my daughter was, oh my God, my daughter was at school in England at the time, and I also, wow, also because my child has a chronic condition, I did not know how it was actually going to happen. I didn't know who I was going to leave my child with. He has a father who really, even though he would be there, he has none of the emotional capacity to look after him, you know, to look after his needs, the needs that come up because of his condition. So, oh God, it really was tricky. My daughter, the holidays came up before I was going to be going to epetlweni. It was just divine timing, really and truly. Because spirit, I always say that spirit works its things out. When it is forced and crazy, then there's something not quite right. There's something not quite right. I'm a strong believer in that.
Because, which is ironic, because a lot of the time, the narrative around ubongoma is heavily associated with chaos. That the more chaotic it is, the more of a sign, it's a good sign. Well, not necessarily a good sign, but it's a clear sign that,
it, believe me, it was chaotic. Everything else that was happening in my life was chaotic. My life was, it fell apart. But, and that's the chaos. That's the, all other people call it the route to your awakening. Oh, that's the awakening. It was crazy. And, but the planning of how, the planning of how spirit makes things work. A spirit will choose, this is in my experience, it chooses the easiest way, the way of least resistance, you know? And I was resisting the spirit, but spirit was working with me to get me to a better place. And this is what actually needed to happen. And in also in meeting me halfway, even though I had lost everything, made sure that when the time came, my daughter would be coming home. And that is why she actually is still here. She chose not to go back. She was able to graduate from here, which took some doing, but it happened because a spirit does meet you halfway. Spirit wants its things to happen. I think that is my belief. I think that is the one thing that mothers going through a similar experience should actually understand, is that a whole lot of the time we want to be in control. But in this time, that critical time of going for initiation, of awakening, is when we actually, everything is about removing control from us. That we actually are aware that we're not in control. It's this whole control thing is just delusional. It's a delusion that we have. We are not in control. So we have to let that, it's easier when we let that go and we give it to spirit, because spirit will make it work. Are you getting me though?
I get you.
It makes it work. Because we really do not have it. We don't have, control is something that is in our heads, really and truly. And that is what awakening is about. It's about learning to trust the spirit. And in the time that when we leave our children, we have to trust. It's about us trusting that I'm doing the correct thing. That is why it also is critical that we are not going because somebody has said. It should be because it is the time of spirit, and spirit has determined it. And then spirit, because spirit will have determined it, it will make it work, because it will have a plan. And I also want to get into controversial things, like how people end up emaphehlweni la, abusive, and I have strong beliefs on things like that.
Yeah.
Strong ones. You need to, and they're all based on listening.
Yeah.
Being guided, not wanting to be in control, and ceding control to this entity that you are finding or discovering actually is the biggest part of you.
And the kids will be fine.
The kids will definitely be fine. The kids will be fine. A thing also is that our children get their spirituality mainly from their mothers, because mothers are highly spiritual. Mothers are more spiritual than, not because of that, but also because once they are outside of the body, it's because of. But the things that your mom does while she's pregnant with you determine a lot about how you're going to turn out, you know? It's a tricky time.
Okay. There would be a part two, because I need to understand the whole dynamics between mothers and fathers in terms of spirituality, and why culture leans towards fathers and why not, you know what I mean? There's that dynamic of paternal and maternal, but yeah.
Did we touch on terminations? And we did
in the beginning, but I don't think we got into it.
In the spirit of the child.
Mm-hmm.
The spirit of the unborn child.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, we said that the spirit enters the body at conception, basically. The embryo at conception, that's what we said. And how then that is treated when we lose a child? In however way, whether it's termination or miscarriage, or stillbirth, or the baby actually comes and then they go, you know? There's ways to
Because in that topic in nowadays, there's what people tend to talk about more is the danger of, you know, when you're pregnant, don't tell anyone. You have jealous friends, you have jealous aunts, or jealous these people who, you know, or that a miscarriage is definitely uktagata. You know, there's evil somewhere if you have a miscarriage. Someone has done something to you. Is that always the case?
No. There could also just be that this spirit changed their mind about wanting to come into this place.
Could that change of mind correlate to, like, because I think sometimes people, and I'm assuming women, I don't know, that they would feel guilty that maybe there's something that I did that changed the spirit's mind. I did something wrong. Or is that something that a person should worry about?
We are always going to feel guilty, hey?
Mm.
Even when a child passes on, you always think, what could I have done to prevent that from happening? What could I have? Could I have stopped it somehow? And if you are, a lot of the time, if we're honest or if we're energetically right, we will have known.
Mm.
You know, when I was pregnant with my daughter, I was always feeling for a heartbeat. I even went to buy a heartbeat checker monitor, and I would sit in bed, I'd just lie there and put that on, and was just comforted by the sound of the heartbeat and knowing that she was alive. And I'd never done that with any of my children before her. And when she was born, she's the one child that I made sure that I closed my door to people, you know, things that I hadn't done with my other children. So I believe that I was a better mother, I was an older mother, I was a more in touch mother. But my other children lived and she didn't, you know? So, but I believe also that to a certain level, I knew that she wasn't coming to stay. I knew something in me. The fact that I would want to constantly listen to her heartbeat, constantly this is the child that I was, like, there for. Because also, I was, because I chose this pregnancy, you know? Unlike the pregnancies that happened to me, this one, I chose it. So I'm going to have this child. And so, they cannot be, they cannot not be a certain level of guilt, you know, because as the mother you're supposed to be the protector, but the spirit is nothing that we can control. There's nothing we can control. And we should look at why we experience that. And it, a lot of the time, it doesn't make sense when it happens. And for a long time after it had happened, those things don't make sense. But that aha will come. The aha will come, and at some point. And also it should not stop us from developing a relationship or a spiritual relationship with that spirit that's left, basically. Like, you know how we started, and you were speaking about how you knew your daughter before she came. That's the same concept. You don't stop knowing your child because they chose the spirit realm over this one. You don't stop it. Once you get over all of it, which is tricky. Okay, maybe I shouldn't say get over all of it. Once you get used to the loss, seek to connect, you know, to your child, because the child is there, because spirit is there, you know, and you can tap into it, and you can still have an amazing relationship, and it will teach you things about yourself, you know, that the children that actually lived cannot teach you about yourself.
That's it.
Yeah.
The thing about parenting is that, unlike most aspects of your life, it is a lifelong process, and in spiritual terms, it lasts many lifetimes to come. There are people who try to opt out of it, especially men. But my personal belief is that if you are a man who has helped to bring a child into this world and you are not actively involved in that child's life, you will never know true peace. It doesn't really matter what the circumstances are, whether it is your fault or not. Something in you will always feel off, and in many ways, it will affect your life in its entirety. I believe that we are intrinsically linked to the spirits that we help to bring into this world, and that that relationship shapes the very fiber of our being. Our connection to our children is beyond genetics, because genetics suggests a kind of detached similarity, a resemblance of features and mannerisms, of oddly shaped fingers, skinny legs, and quirky laughter. But by now we are all familiar with generational trauma, and whether you believe in ancestors or not, you do carry their experiences in the very marrow of your bones. As such, your children and their children after will carry your story in the blood that courses through their veins. For better or for worse. My name is Vusumzi Nqandi. Thank you so much for joining me on yet another episode of The Journey Gwantu. I wish you light, I wish you courage, and I wish you all the best on your journey. Magwandi.